യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദികേന യോപാകരോത്തം പ്രവരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സ്തുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ ക്രമാദ് വിവരണസ്യ ച. സോ വി ആർ ചാൻറ്റിംഗ് ദിസ് മന്ത്ര, ദിസ് വാട്ട് വി കോൾ ഇൻ സാൻസ്ക്രിറ്റ് പ്രണാമ മന്ത്ര, മീൻസ് hymn, that hymn of invocation, of paying our obeisance, respects to the great sages who composed this work. So I have explained a few times earlier, but I should try to explain once more. So the first verse says, our greetings or namaskar or greetings or respects to the great sage Patanjali who composed the Yoga Sutras. That's the meaning of the first verse. Now, here is a short description of the great contributions of the author of Yoga Sutra. The author of Yoga Sutra, Patanjali, must have lived around 1400 BC, and his contributions were not limited to yoga psychology or yoga philosophy, but also he made contributions to other branches of learning. So the verse is very interesting. Yogena chittasya padena vacham malam sharirasya ja vaidyakena. Malam, he means filth, dirt, the foreign body, things that we want to wash off. Now through this composition of the Yoga Sutra work, Patanjali presents before us a method, a process of mental cleaning. Cleaning our mind, cleansing of mind of all impurities. How to still our mind, how to make our mind calm and quiet and pure. Getting rid of all anxieties, all problems and all worries. How to convert our mind into our closest and best friend. Mind can be our worst enemy if it is unrestrained. And mind can be our best friend, guide and philosopher, when mind is friendly with us. So for that, mind should be purified. So Patanjali wrote this book, which contains 195 aphorisms, small statements, not necessarily in full sentence, divided into four chapters for helping humanity to get rid of mental problems, mental impurities. Then he wrote an extensive commentary on the Bible of Sanskrit grammar. The Bible of Sanskrit grammar was, you know, Ashtadhyayi, which contains more than 4,000 aphorisms, which you can never really understand unless you learn under a teacher and also with the help of commentaries. To give an example, the first sutra of Vyakarana, Panini, is the author of the Vyakarana Sutra, is Vriddhihi At Aich. I don't think you can make anything out of it, even if you have not studied under a teacher. And the last sutra is A, A. Now, what do you make out of it? You can learn this only with the help of commentaries and under great masters who have learned from their teachers through a succession of student-teacher tradition. Now, to clarify Panini's statements, Patanjali wrote a huge volume, which actually runs into several volumes in published version. It's called a Mahabhashyam. Bhashyam means commentary. Maha means great, grand. So he wrote an extensive commentary on grammar. Vacham malam means to get rid of the dirt and filth of spoken word. Actually, spoken word was the unit of language, you know, not written word. Written form evolved much later. So to help us to have a pure mind, he wrote these Yoga Sutras. And to help us to speak properly, he wrote an extensive commentary on Sanskrit grammar. Then he wrote a great work on Ayurveda, the ancient Indian school of medicine. It's also famous. So, practically, he wrote these three great works. So, before this great sage, I bow down. That's the meaning. The second verse refers to three great sages and others who made extensive contribution to yoga psychology and yoga philosophy. The first one was Patanjali himself. So he is the author of the aphorisms. And then these aphorisms, as I said, were not so easily comprehensible, intelligible. So to make them intelligible, Vyasa wrote a commentary. And Shankaracharya wrote a commentary on the commentary of Vyasa. So these are the three great sages, the holy trinity of yoga tradition. Stuve Patanjalim Vyasam Shankaram cha Munitrayam Kartru Sutrasya Bhashyasya Kramat Vivaranasya cha. So Patanjali wrote Yoga Sutras. Vyasa wrote Yoga Sutra. Bhashya means a commentary on Yoga Sutras. And Shankaracharya wrote Bhashya Vivarana, means an explanation, an explanatory commentary on Vyasa's commentary on Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. These are the three great sages who made extensive contribution to yoga system, both yoga psychology and also yoga philosophy. So that's the beginning, because we described these verses long back, so I thought I would rather just revise it once more. Now, in the last class, we were dealing with a very, very important sutra in the Vibhudipada, that is the ninth sutra. The sutra was Vyutthana Nirodha Samskara Yohu Abhibhava Pradur Bhavu Nirodha Kshanajitta Nveham Nirodha Parinamaha. So, as I mentioned earlier, three types of mental transformations are explained here, of which the highest is Nirodha Parinama. And the second highest is that in the ninth sutra, it's called Ekagrata Parinama. And the third one, the lowest, is Samadhi Parinama. Now, to understand this mental transformations, how it really happens, how our mind evolves and changes, gets purified, we had to get back to some of the earlier verses, earlier aphorisms, sutras, where Patanjali explains how our mind works, how he analyzes the functions of the mental world. So, to begin with, I already explained to you earlier, I mean, perhaps you may remember, you know, according to yoga system, our mental life has two aspects. One is experience could be in the form of experiences coming from external world, or experiences that we go through in our mind, happiness, unhappiness, anxiety, worry, all these obsessions, phobias, fears, anxiety. All these are experiences called bhoga in Sanskrit language. So this is one aspect. The second aspect is how we react to these experiences. So experience and reaction. Reaction is called vega or udvega in Sanskrit. So experience is called bhoga, and reaction is called vega or udvega. How we react to different experiences coming from external world and also from within our own mental system. When we feel anxious, how we react. So it is mind reacting towards itself in a way. But everyone will feel, you know, suppose we people feel fear, anxiety, worry. Our mind doesn't completely get absorbed in worry. If it gets completely absorbed in worry, then we won't think of getting out of this worry. When we feel angry, if our mind gets completely absorbed in anger, then the mind will not recognize the need to get out of anger. Anger won't be a problem if you completely identify yourself with anger. See, certain cases of mania, for example. A maniac doesn't feel the need to get out of his problem. Because the response system, one part of the mental system, is completely non-functional. So, such people, that's why, you know, that's why mad people will be able to exert enormous physical energy in whatever they do. Normal people may get angry, but they also will feel the awareness, well, I am angry, it's not good for me. If you don't feel that way, you are not very normal. That's what it means, actually. Should be careful. It's complete identification with internal feeling, experience, is a sign of abnormality. So a normal person will have these two aspects, experience and how we react ourselves to that experience. So the reaction takes the form of three mental responses. One is you get great attraction, attachment towards that. See, a happy experience can attract us and keep us attached to that if it is very happy, present. If it is unhappy or something that gives us unhappiness, or if it is very unpleasant, then we may go against it. The opposite of attachment. It's not detachment, aversion. So raga means attachment. Dvesha means it's just opposite. So these are the first two types of reactions of our mind towards experiences, either internal or originating an external world. And the experiences, for example, you're dealing with a person is different from the way you feel hunger or anger. See, the reaction of the our interaction with the person may create anger, but it originates from that person's behavior. So anger naturally is produced in mind. And the third type of reaction is called abhinivesha. Trying to avoid. So first one is raga, attachment. Second one is aversion. Aversion also gets us locked into it, hooked into it, because we hate something, want to avoid something. From a psychological point of view, both are two forms of bondages, extreme attachment and extreme aversion. The third one is abhinivesha, means moving away from, trying to avoid neither attachment nor aversion. So these are the three ways in which our mind works, our mind reacts, so to speak. Now the next subject we have to discuss is how they affect our life, our actions, our behavior. Because these points should be kept in mind when we proceed further into further sutras. So as I mentioned, attachment towards something, it is called raga. And then aversion against something is called dvesha. And then moving away from something, avoiding something, it is called bhaya or abhinivesha. Now, along with these three forms of reactions of the mind towards experiences originating from external world or within our own mind, there are two other factors that come into play in the normal functioning of our mind. One is ignorance. And so ignorance, the word avidya, you find the word avidya mentioned in the Yoga Sutra, Yoga psychology, in Vedanta, in the various fields, different branches of Indian philosophy, you get this word avidya. The vidya is knowledge, avidya is opposite, avidya, ignorance. Now, what is ignorance here? Is ignorance just the absence of knowledge? Ignorance is not necessarily just the absence of knowledge. Ignorance itself can be a positive aspect that makes us feel egoistic, identifying ourselves with the unreal. For example, in actual practice, let us say, when we react to certain situations, people get unnecessarily worried, unnecessarily anxious, unhappy or angry. There you find we are identifying ourselves with a momentary impulse that suddenly occurs in the mind, and we get completely identified with that. And when this identification takes place, what happened? Extreme attachment or aversion, liking something or terrible hatred towards something else, or trying to avoid. All these three reactions originate when we identify ourselves with something. Well, I shall explain this. First of all, let us say, I'll try to make this clear. Suppose we are facing a problem. Everyone faces problems. There are times when we lose the balance, when we identify ourselves with the tiny little being who is confronting a serious problem. Suppose people lose the money in the bank or in business. They lose their sleep, they get completely crushed. Whole balance is lost. The reason is we identify ourselves with a living being who is exclusively dependent upon money. So when that feeling of dependence comes, my mental balance is lost. And that feeling of dependence brings misery. It's because we identify ourselves with a being, a person, who is dependent upon, exclusively, miserably dependent upon wealth and money, whose mental balance will be lost if he loses money. So Yoga Sutra and Vedanta teaches us that we are something beyond, something that goes beyond being a physical, a psychophysical being who is dependent upon money, wealth or momentary circumstances. So once we identify ourselves as something beyond the psychophysical dimension, once we identify ourselves with a spiritual dimension, then what happens? We may have to face problems, but we'll be able to face those problems with a smile, without being crushed, because we do not identify ourselves with those momentary things. It is this identification that's meant by egoism. That is aham, asmita, is the word used in yoga psychology. Avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesha, these are the five kleshas, which constitute afflictions. In fact, this is the psychological anatomy of bondage and misery. The one reason why we feel unhappy or anxious or worried is this. First of all, extreme liking for something, raga, extreme aversion towards something else, or moving away towards something else. these three types of reactions towards experiences originating in our mind or in external world. And then what happens? Because of ignorance of the true nature of our, because of ignorance of our own true nature, we identify ourselves, we define, we interpret ourselves as a psychophysical being. Yoga and Vedanta tell us we have a spiritual dimension that goes beyond the vagaries of mind. So once we develop this spiritual dimension, what happens? We will be able to live in this world with great joy and happiness. Now, one may feel this is very simple. You know, in theory it looks very simple, but in actual practice it's not that simple. When we really try to confront our own mind, we feel helpless frequently. We want to do, we are determined to do, we make all conditions positive and helpful, but when we try to do that, we feel an invisible mental block suddenly arises. Even if we decide, take strong determination 100 times, it is possible for us to do at the physical level. At the mental level, we find it's not that easy. There is an invisible mental block. It means a conflict, a gulf, a wide gap between what we want to do, sincerely what we want to do, and what we eventually end up doing. So this is the main problem. If once we can solve this problem, many of the problems of today's world can be solved. For example, psychologically speaking, you know, almost 99%, 99.99% of the world population want peace and happiness and joy. Nobody wants misery. There is nobody who is looking for misery. Even they do evil things, but they think that by doing evil things, they will get joy. Still, joy is always a form of mental peace, mental relaxation. If you are mentally agitated, it's certainly not a joyful condition of the mind. So every kind of happiness is a mental relaxation. What we call happiness is nothing but mental peace and happiness. But we are not able to do what we really want to do. Even sincere spiritual seekers, trying hard, find themselves as if they reach a dead end, a mental block, which they cannot get over. Patanjali's great contribution to modern psychology, the psychology of humanities, he analyzes third bar. He gives a very detailed analysis of how the human mind works. Now, according to him, our actions, our impulse, when not properly restrained, not controlled, will create unhealthy or unpleasant residual forms. It's called klesha samskara. I shall try to explain this. The klesha samskara says, try to explain this. Patanjali says, whatever we do, any action, not necessarily physical action, not necessarily action at the physical level, a thought, an idea, or a concept that accidentally emerges in our mind, will not die immediately. Suppose a thought has arisen in your mind. You did not implement that thought into action. Still, that thought will create a consequence, an after effect, even if you have not put that thought into action. It may be just an idea or a concept. You want to help somebody, want to do harm to somebody. It could be good or bad thoughts. Whatever may be our thoughts, good or bad, will produce an after effect. even if you do not put that thought into physical action. If we put that thought into physical action with great awareness of what we are doing, then the after effect will be much more solid and strong. But even an accidental thought, good thought or bad thought, that emerges in the mind, doesn't vanish when the thought apparently disappears from the mind. It will create an after effect, and that after effect will be stored in a mental system. That residual effect is called vritti. So sometimes in the Yoga Sutra, Yoga Psychology, you may find the word karma. And karma, if you read Moni Williams or Apte Dictionary, you find karma means action. Here, it's not physical action alone that is implied. A word, a thought, a concept, an idea, or physical action. Whatever emerges in the mind will create a residue, an after effect. That's why, you know, people are not able to avoid unpleasant memories and impressions. That's a very serious problem for any person taking to spiritual life. So, the moment you try to meditate, the moment that you take a decision, but tomorrow onwards I shall read this good book, even not necessarily very, very introspective form of spiritual practice like meditation, but even the act of reading a good book or a decision to pray or decision to do something noble, when we take the decision, you feel the mind produces a challenge. It may be in the form of an excuse, postponement, procrastination, false excuses, or whatever may be. And this may come in the form of unpleasant memories, unpleasant impressions. This all because previous actions, and according to yoga system, not actions pertaining to this life, even actions belonging to previous life cycles, have accumulated in the mental system. And those impressions, called vrittis, do not cooperate with you when you try to do something noble. Today you decide, tomorrow I shall give a $1,000 check to some philanthropical activities, earthquake victims. But tomorrow when you draw the, oh, you will do later. It's not just an attempt to avoid. Because the mind suddenly brings up from the past some impressions and memories which are not very supportive of philanthropical activity. That's what happens. So, karma produces vritti, and this vritti becomes a strong, potency, these impressions. In fact, they produce our character. So what we are actually, Patanjali uses the word klesha samskara. That means any action, good or bad, if not restrained, it may lead to action, or even a thought produces a vritti. So our character is a sum total, a totality of these vrittis and samskaras. So what is our character? Our character is nothing but a totality. It is constituted by these vrittis and samskaras. So karma produces a vritti. Vritti produces samskara. Samskara, it goes deeper. Number of positive vrittis coming together will become a strong tendency, good or bad. So we must try to do good actions, good deeds, good thoughts, because good thoughts, good deeds, good actions will produce positive samskaras, positive vrittis. So our mental system will be filled with more and more positive samskaras and positive vrittis and vasanas. These samskaras become vasana, means a strong tendency to act again according to the nature of the memories or impressions. And this again produces action. Action again continues this cycle. So this cycle continues. Now, so as I mentioned, our human character is nothing but a totality of these samskaras. Now, how to confront unpleasant memories, impressions, and vrittis? Patanjali doesn't focus on this subject in a very objective way. But the Patanjali system gives some very, very rational, highly psychological action, psychological methods of confronting unpleasant memories and impressions. So as I mentioned, when there is a conflict between what we want to do and what we eventually end up doing, that conflict is due to an invisible mental block. And this mental block is nothing but a manifestation of unpleasant samskaras, undesirable samskaras, which are not conducive to what we are trying to do. Now, how to confront them? To confront them, Patanjali says, we have to practice 10 fundamental disciplines, which is called yamas and niyamas. When we practice yama and niyama, our vrittis get purified. Our character undergoes a refinement, a processing, a purification. Yamas are ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya, aparigraha. Non-violence, truthfulness, absence of greed, not wanting other people's things, non-possessiveness, pure life, and then purity, contentment, feeding the mind with good thoughts by reading good books or reciting auspicious ideas, words which give auspicious ideas. So through this process, new positive vrittis, impressions are created. So if accumulated impressions and vrittis create problems for the mind, then we can counter them by producing good samskaras, good vrittis, good impressions through good actions. Not necessarily through physical actions, but feeding the mind with good ideas. So one important point is, whatever we do, whatever we think, immediately affects the mind. It produces a residual effect. So If we always try to focus on doing good things, good ideas, it can have a dramatic effect on the mind. In fact, you may have read the lives of great saints, because if you read lives of great saints, apparently it doesn't tally with Patanjali's system. You'll find it. So great saints who may have led an indisciplined life suddenly become saints and sages without going through this process of mental purification, yamas and niyamas. I can give one example. The example I'm giving is historical, because it happened almost 140 years back. He was a great dramatist. He was a playwright. One of the greatest literary figures in 19th century Bengali literature. And he was running a very famous theater. He had a theater group under him. So he was a prominent person, but he led a very bohemian life, indisciplined life. He came in contact with Sri Ramakrishna, and he became a saint. Now, if you read the lives of Saint Augustine, for example, he heard a noise and suddenly he was drawn towards, he became a saint. Or Saint Francis of Assisi, for example. You find many such great saints who had a complete transformation in their life. Saint Peter, for example. Saint Paul, of course, Saint Paul. So you find many great saints in different spiritual traditions, not all, but quite a few, you find, had sudden transformations in their life without actually going through this process of mental purification or practicing of deliberate and continuous practice of yamas and niyamas. So how do you explain this? Patanjali himself gives a clue as to how this happens. So he is, one of his sutras is Ishvara Pranidhanatva. So either through the practice of yamas and niyamas or through Ishvara Pranidhana. So Ishvara Pranidhana literally means surrendering to God. That's what it literally means. Well, from a yoga point of view, what it means is you link yourself to a great spiritual ideal or a spiritual person whom you believe in, whom you have trust, very sincerely, 100%. So it's very interesting sutra with Patanjali gives. On the one hand, you should practice non-violence, truthfulness, non-stealing, non-possessiveness, and chaste life, and pure inner purity and outer purity, contentment, reading, reciting mantras, and so on. And then he says, very interestingly, he says, suppose you cannot do all this systematically. He gives a clue. You just surrender yourself to God. Now, once you understand the psychology of this surrender, you will understand how rational Patanjali is. See, if we sincerely surrender our will to a divine power, sincerely, then that surrender, the act of surrendering ourselves, our mind, our actions, our thoughts, everything to divine power will not be lost. The memory of having surrendered ourselves the divine will remain fresh in our mind throughout our life. That is the secret, that is the mystery of making of a saint in all religious traditions. So what happened to Girichandra Ghosh, I can tell you. He was a drunkard, a bohemian. He led a wayward life. Not a very disciplined person. Not a conventional believer in God. But he had one good quality. Whatever he did with all sincerity, without any reserve. So Sri Ramakrishna told him, Sri Ramakrishna told him, well, you try to think of God once in your life, once a day. The man was very sincere. He said, well, I cannot, because he was a drunkard. You know. So once you get up in the morning, you should take the name of God. You know, drunkard cannot guarantee. But most people do that, all right, tomorrow onwards I will do. That's because they don't take seriously what the teacher tells him. So their answer also is not very serious. You know. But in this man's case, he fully trusted his teacher. So when the teacher told him, well, you should take the name of God once and when you get up, well, I don't know when I'm going to. But he's a drunkard. And, or at least whenever, so he knew that he wouldn't be able to practice it. Sri Ramakrishna did not ask him to stop drinking. That's an interesting thing. Because he would have immediately refused. No, because he was so sincere, he knew that he can't all of a sudden stop drinking. And finally, Sri Ramakrishna told him, well, you give your whole responsibility, spiritual responsibility for your spiritual life, hand over to me. The power of attorney is called. So, the word is used actually. You see, its Bengali equivalent was used in the original teachings of Sri Ramakrishna. He used the word. Your power of attorney, spiritual life. And Girishchandra Ghosh thought, it's an easy thing. He doesn't have to pay much. I mean, he need not go to a temple. He need not pray. He need not read scriptures. He need not recite sacred mantras. He can just hand over the whole responsibility. And he did that. But he did that with all awareness, all sincerity. So from that day onwards, he could not do anything wrong. Because when he tried to drink, the figure of Sri Ramakrishna appeared in his mind. So he stopped drinking. Practically, he could not do anything wrong, anything undesirable from that day onwards. So what really happens is, even if he cannot practice yama and niyama, disciplines, Patanjali himself says, the psychology of surrender helps us to compensate for the lack of other disciplines. Because once this happens, our mental thoughts suddenly start being purified. It goes through a process of self-purification. Because every moment, when you speak something, when you think something, when you do something, you're always thinking of the higher spiritual ideal, higher spiritual teacher to whom you have surrendered yourself is responsible. So what happens, you know, with every thought, with every word, with every act, the idea of God came and immediately checked him from doing something undesirable. So that is how Girishchandra Ghosh became a new person. So his whole vritti actually underwent a complete transformation from a yogic standpoint. Because his mind was always dwelling on the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna, whom he trusted as his teacher. And whenever he did something, he walked, he wrote his plays or directed the dramas in the theater, star theater. When he walked in the streets, practically all his life, every moment, his mind went to Sri Ramakrishna. So what happens when your mind is always linked to some great spiritual ideal? The whole mind undergoes a change. All the accumulated vrittis and vasanas and samskaras, coming even from previous life, gets purified. Now here I use the word previous life. So this needs some explanation, because in modern psychology, you see, the point is, Patanjali uses one particular term. It's called karmasaya. Now, before we try to understand this term, we should keep in mind that Patanjali anticipates that all of us accept the reality of afterlife, the reality of rebirth. Life is not just one chance. We will continue living even after death. So death is not a full stop. It is only a comma, because our life will continue. So he says there is such a thing as karmasya. That's a word Patanjali uses. Karmic residue, it is called. Now, this karmasya is a repository of samskaras and vasanas, which remain accumulated in the storehouse of samskaras, places. So impulsive actions, that means actions posted by kleshas, produce what we call a second type of samskaras, which are known as karmasya, or karmic residue. Now, klesha samskaras, for example, sudden anger, sudden happiness or unhappiness, which operate in the present life. There are certain deep-rooted samskaras, which are called klesha samskaras, which may manifest in this life or next life. So Patanjali says, but many of our samskaras or characteristics or tendencies or behavior patterns or patterns of thought, all these may have some cause, some source that goes beyond this life. So, in fact, that's why this invisible mental block appears. So, that's a psychological explanation. I mean, this is a very serious subject in yoga psychology and also in any in modern behavioral psychology. In a way, it is very simple, but it's very serious also. See, even if we decide to do something noble, good, that we know will benefit us in our life, we are not really able to do that, many of our actions. At the physical level, it is simple. If you want to go to the left side or right side of the road, you may be able to do that. At the grossest level, it is easy. We can decide and we can act according to our decision. But where mind is involved, the samskaras and vrittis and impressions of our previous life come interfering. So that's why today if you write in a diary tomorrow, this thought I will think, or next moment, this is the thought I'm going to think, it's not possible. Even this action I will do tomorrow, there is a chance that we may succeed, but there is no certainty in fact. If actions that we decide to do tomorrow are somewhat different from what you have been doing till now, then there is every chance that mind may not cooperate when the real movement comes. So why this invisible mental block? So Patanjali gives the answer. The karmic residues, impressions and samskaras, which we may call memories, sometimes they may manifest in a grosser form, memories. They suddenly come emerging in the mind and they create a mental block. So we fail to do what we decided to do, maybe the previous moment or the previous day. Now if you analyze our life, we may not often find a trace for explaining why we failed. One can understand, you know, in modern psychology also accepts, there may be problems, mental blocks related to memories belonging to this life that you may have gone through after the formation of memory, after childhood days. Many of these memories at subconscious level may come to the surface of the mind and may create a mental block and you may eventually fail. We may fail to do what we want to do. That is understandable and modern psychology goes that far. But there are many, many problems which cannot really be traced to memories belonging to this life. So he says, Patanjali says, the karmasaya, which contains a lot of samskaras or karmic residue coming from previous life, suddenly create a mental block. So how to confront them? There is a way to confront them. Because these negative samskaras which create problems were formed when we did something, when we thought something, when we spoke something. It's not really desirable. So by speaking something desirable and noble, by doing something noble, by thinking something noble, we can create counter samskaras, which may neutralize the effect of the negative samskaras. And if you continue doing good actions, then you have a surplus of good samskaras, which will remove this mental block and help you to go ahead with what you want to do. So that is the genius of Patanjali. So there are many who, in fact, maybe a few sessions earlier, some people asked this question. What is the role of God in Patanjali system? Patanjali accepts the concept of spiritual transformation. In fact, if you read the life of the great saints who were not saints before they became saints, if you analyze the transition that took place in their life, you find from one particular transition point, they started living in an entirely different manner. That means there was no mental block. Where did it go? How could they confront this mental block? Because of the strong faith in a spiritual ideal or a spiritual teaching, that the strong faith completely neutralizes this mental block, because it crushes it, it completely destroys all negative samskaras, negative memories and negative impressions, and opens the road for moving forward in spiritual life. So now we will have interaction. So today I didn't bring my watch, I think. What's the time? Yeah? 7 minutes, 8 minutes, 10 minutes, okay. So you can just raise some doubts, anything, discussion.
So Swami, it does not seem that, you know, the yamas and niyamas are really separate from surrender, because, I mean, I have a little trouble fathoming that just doing the yamas and niyamas alone is sufficient without ultimately coming to the point where you become detached. You say, I surrender my will and I'm no longer attached to this body. I will let someone else direct this.
According to some commentators, later commentators, Patanjali used this word Ishara Pranidhanadva, or through surrender to Ishara. That means as an alternate method he suggested. Because he may have felt, if you practice yamas and niyamas just as you practice some sports or some, you have to practice some physical disciplines to succeed in sports or games. Like that, can we practice the mental level? It's impossible. Because the problem is we are using our mind to change our mind. So you need a means, an instrument, a superior instrument, which is bigger than the disturbed mind. So how will you be able to face the problems of mind at the mental level? So the problems of the mind cannot be solved at the mental level. To solve the problems of mind, you have to transcend the mental level, you have to go beyond mental level. So Ishara Pradhana, this surrender, lifts you above the mental level. Otherwise you are at mental level only. It's not possible. Otherwise, psychology could solve all the problems of human mind, which they are not able to do. Schizophrenia, many phobias, there is no real solution, no remedy for many of the problems. So, the point is, you have to raise yourself beyond the mental level to solve many of the mental problems. The spiritual ideal is the solution. That's why Patanjali is called Ishara Pranidhanadva. Tomorrow onwards, you should practice non-violence. But what about the tendencies and impressions we have created, we have constructed? You have to confront them. How do you confront them? You are trying to confront them with the very mind which is affected by violent tendencies. So how do you counteract violent tendencies with a mind which itself has violent tendencies? So the mind should be lifted above the mental level. So Ishara Pradhana, or surrender, or identifying also with the great spiritual ideal, takes the mind above the mental level. That's why mental problems cannot be solved at mental level. Ultimately, mental problems can be solved only at the spiritual level. I don't mean to say that spirituality can solve all the problems. What I mean to say is, along with psychology and psychiatry, a spiritual ideal will be helpful for many of the problems which cannot be really solved at the mental level. That's the idea behind. That's why the meditation, all these are different approaches and attempts to bring in the spiritual ideal to psychiatry. The major challenge is that modern psychology and psychiatry do not try to go beyond the memory formation days of this life. So what about problems which have their roots somewhere else? That's the idea, please.
Swamiji, I just wanted to say thank you. And I feel that getting to a point of surrender, I came here.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful that when I got to that point, you all were here.
Yeah.
So I wanted to thank you.
Right.
And a beautiful weekend ceremony.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You want to ask something? They give that.
I prefer to speak without a microphone, actually. I don't like to voice too loudly. I just want to hear your thoughts on one of the tenets is truth. We seem to be living in a time when many people think that truth can be invented. And to me, truth is transcendent and immutable and not to be touched by human hands or manipulated. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on this one tenet.
You're absolutely correct. You're right. Truth can be relative. Truth can be absolute. The absolute truth cannot be invented. If you invent something, it cannot be true. Truth existed before it was discovered. And it will exist there if you never discover it. So it was never born anywhere, and it never disappear anytime. It doesn't belong to time. It's beyond time. So and it doesn't need somebody to discover it. It's beyond causation. So it's beyond definition. It's beyond description. If you can define something, it's limited. Truth is the infinite. So that's the idea behind. True, yes. So I think there's no more doubts or discussions anyway. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Pranamastu.